The number of Oregonians who died of a drug overdose nearly tripled over the past 5 years. Oregon Health and Science University has greatly expanded the reach of its training program across the state to improve addiction training among healthcare professionals and law enforcement. My guest is Dr. Dan Hoover. He's an assistant professor of medicine at OHSU and director of the Addiction Medicine ECHO program. Welcome, Dr. Dan.
Hi, Mike. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with your work at OHSU. Tell us about what you do there.
I do a whole variety of things. I guess first I'll say I do hospital addiction medicine care. I'm on a team with a social worker and a recovery peer support specialist. I do work as a liaison to some of the criminal justice system organizations here in Oregon, the sheriff's offices, the jails, and some police departments related to deflection, which is Oregon's new drug policy approach. And then, as in your introduction, I'm the Addiction Medicine ECHO program director, and that's really an education role where I'm helping train professionals around the state how to treat addiction in their different contexts.
Well, tell us about the ECHO program. What does ECHO stand for?
ECHO stands for Extension for Community Healthcare Outcomes, and I want you to really think of it as an exciting learning program. The type of model, we'll call it a learning collaborative, because it's not simply that myself or other doctors or faculty are just teaching the participants, but we're actually having participants teach each other. There's a real emphasis on peer-to-peer learning. That's why we call it a learning collaborative.
Okay. So your training program has expanded greatly because there's a need. Give us a sense of the drug overdose problem across the state.
Well, ever since we had fentanyl arrive here and really saturate our drug supply, we've been seeing an increase in drug overdoses. And not to only speak about fentanyl, we also have a huge stimulant problem with methamphetamine, and we know that co-use of both stimulants and fentanyl actually increases the odds for overdose. So Oregon's facing that dual problem, and then our health systems have been challenged to really respond. And that's a large part of what we address on the ECHO. We do talk about how to adapt our care systems and adapt the way we use medications to account for fentanyl's arrival here and how that's changed things.
So what's the trending pattern over the course of time? Is it a steady growth over decades, or has it been just a sudden spike in recent years? What's the data?
So we absolutely saw a spike, an increase in overdose with fentanyl saturating our drug supply. And that's a similar trend, actually, to what we've seen across the country with fentanyl, because fentanyl saturated the drug supply on the East Coast first, and it moved west. There's some very good researchers like Dr. Del Pozo who's done publications on this, looking at drug supply seizures and tracking when fentanyl saturates the drug supply in different states. But for Oregon, it was around early 2020 when we saw that happen.
So what did the data look like? I mean, you've had drug overdoses and people dying at some level, and then you saw this sudden spike. What does that data tell you? What does it look like?
Well, I guess I want to be a little cautious because I am not an epidemiologist looking at public health data all of the time.
Gotcha.
And so the Oregon Health Authority has done some good work reporting on the overdose data, like what are the actual numbers. I probably won't try to quote you a statistic right now, just that at OHSU, we're absolutely concerned about the rise in overdoses and trying to help our health systems respond to that.
So what kind of symptoms are typical among drug users that are experiencing a traumatic impact to their immediate health? And what can we do at the moment to help them survive?
Yeah, I think in terms of sort of the acute impact on a person using drugs, the most serious clinical situations that we see overdose and we see opioid withdrawal pretty commonly. And I'll speak about those. So an overdose event is absolutely life-threatening, and if it's an opioid overdose, someone might be unconscious and their breathing might be slowing down or stopping, and then their heart can stop as well. They could have a heart attack essentially from lack of oxygen, and so that's an emergency situation. Thankfully, we do have a very useful, helpful medicine, naloxone, that can reverse an opioid overdose. And all it takes is really someone ready and able to respond with that medicine. So a lot of organizations and a lot of organizations have been getting naloxone into the hands of people who use drugs and also into all the to go with all of our first responders, like our ambulances and police cars, so that naloxone is available whenever one of these overdoses might happen. And my hope is just that people can be saved with that medication if they do have an overdose. And then I think the second topic I wanted to mention was opioid withdrawal, because if you talk to a patient about what opioid withdrawal feels like, people will say it feels like dying. It feels awful. It's the worst experience ever. And so people, if they're trying to quit a drug like fentanyl, they are experiencing severe withdrawal symptoms and find it really, really difficult to stop using. They have that fear that they're going to have withdrawal, and then the symptoms are excruciating. And we actually have medicines that are really significantly helpful to treat withdrawal symptoms and to help people stop using opioids. Those would be medicines like buprenorphine or methadone.
My guest today is Dr. Dan Hoover. He's an assistant professor of medicine at OHSU and director of the Addiction Medicine ECHO program. ECHO stands for Extension for Community Healthcare Outcomes. So, Doc, is any of this medication available for families and just lay people if they're close to someone who they know is involved in doing drugs?
Yeah, actually, the medicine naloxone is now available over the counter. So that means you could buy that on the shelf at a pharmacy. You can order it from Amazon.com even. I've actually done that myself to have some on hand in case I'm responding to an overdose. I will say the other medications I mentioned, buprenorphine and methadone, those can be prescribed by anyone with a DEA license, but it's going to need a health provider to prescribe those. And that's because we need to have that training to use those medicines appropriately and make sure that we're doing that in a way that benefits the patient and there's not a risk of harm from the medicines that are being used correctly, basically.
How is it administered?
For naloxone, it's commonly administered intranasally. That means that it's a nasal spray that would be squirted into the nose. The other way of administering naloxone would be into a muscle, and there's an injector system for doing that. For the medications that treat the long-term opioid addiction, buprenorphine and methadone, there's a variety of ways. It can dissolve under the tongue. There's some oral dosing, and there's also injectable long-acting medications.
Do you have a sense of the demographic groups that are disproportionately affected, or is this problem occurring across demographic groups and geographic regions at similarly alarming rates?
So we do know that in Oregon, we've got very disproportionate effects on our BIPOC community when it comes to the overdose rate. So we unfortunately are seeing that.
Is this age related at all?
Yeah, I don't have that data in front of me, but I'm going to say I recall kind of young men to middle age being the most common sort of age and sex demographic there.
So tell me more about the drug addiction training program, and why is it growing in popularity?
Yeah, I'd love to. So I think that with the opioid epidemic coming about in America, we had a lot of health professionals that really this wasn't a focus of their training when they were in their professional school. And so now they're in practice and they're likely very busy. For example, maybe busy in a primary care office, and they need a way to get an update when it comes to fentanyl and when it comes to prescribing medications that treat opioid addiction. These are things they weren't necessarily trained on when they entered practice, but they're now really, really relevant. We could have a patient with opioid addiction come into an emergency room or a primary care office or a hospital or a jail, and that's actually becoming common, that we need to be ready to offer them evidence-based care and do that well at any of those locations. So that's really where our addiction medicine echo programs are so helpful. It's an easy, accessible way for busy professionals to get that education, and they get to practice through doing cases with us on the echo program. Basically interactive learning, and that's going to help that knowledge really stick with them.
Well, your training has exploded, risen about 65% from what I understand, just in the last year. How does it work? How does the training process work, and how do you reach people all over the state?
Yeah, great questions. So we use Zoom primarily to host our echo programs. The format usually is that we'll have an echo course running for a quarter, maybe 10 to 12 weeks, and participants will tune in for 1 hour each week for that education. And then why have we seen this expansion? I really think we've absolutely tried to adapt to the needs in Oregon over time, and that's led us to expand with some special new echoes in the past couple of years. And I'm going to just name those. We launched a program for adolescents because we're seeing more fentanyl use and drug use among adolescents in Oregon. We launched a program for jails. We launched one for the pregnant patient population, and we launched one focused on emergency departments. And so with new echoes really focused on these specific demographics or specific professionals who work in those settings, we're attracting more folks to echo.
So you've seen an increase in law enforcement participation as well?
Yeah, I'm actually super excited about that. I think this was important for me as the director of our program to recognize the valuable role that law enforcement has in responding to opioid use. As first responders, they're often giving naloxone to someone, saving a life. We also have our jails, of course, and if you talk to jail commanders, they're seeing a really high rate of fentanyl withdrawal in their facilities right now. So there's opportunities there as well to help people get treatment and get onto medications for their opioid use disorder. And so this last academic year, between fall 2023 into spring 2024, it was the first year we really had a substantial number of participants from law enforcement, both jails and police and sheriff's office staff coming to our echo programs.
Well, how do you measure the success of the training program?
We pretty extensively survey our echo participants, and they may get tired of hearing me say, please fill out your surveys, but I tell them that every week because we're always looking to make sure what we're teaching is on track, that it's meeting the needs for the different learners and the different professions that they're in. So we survey them quite often, and then we measure outcomes over time with them. Like we ask how much their understanding increased about opioid use disorder or alcohol use disorder. We ask them also if they're empowered to make changes in their professional setting. Did they write new policies or protocols? Did they start to receive consults from their colleagues now that they're an informal expert in this topic? So we ask them all those questions and track the outcomes, which are quite good.
An informal expert. How long is the training?
Usually the participants do this 10 to 12 week series, 1 hour a week. And then many of our participants, around a third of them, will go on to take multiple of our echo programs because they like the education that they're getting. So they might do a couple series.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the exchange today. Thank you, Dr. Hoover.
All right. Thanks for having me, Mike.